Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to the Dead Podcast. I'm your host, Desi, and on this podcast, I discuss all things spooky and weird, from ghosts, demons, religion, to folklore, urban legends, true crime, and all things paranormal, with some horror movie reviews sprinkled in. So join me on this spooky ride.
You are listening to Perplexity.
In western Pennsylvania, there lies Beaver County and the sleepy small town of Economy Borough. This rural and wealthy town consists primarily of farmland. It's a quiet and easygoing place, and crime is relatively low. But on the afternoon of Friday, December 12, 2014, all of that would change. A teenage boy was walking through the woods after school, walking towards a deer processing area. He had recently gotten interested in hunting, and on his walk, he came upon an embankment, seeing something lying on the forest floor. At first, he thought it was a gut pile, leftovers from a processed deer. But when he got closer, he realized this was no gut pile. This was a human head. The discovery would send investigators into a tizzy and result in a mystery that continues to perplex investigators and townsfolk to this day. This is the story of the Jane Doe of Economy Borough and the Severed Head Case. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. As always, I am your host, Kadra, and if you're new to the show, hello and welcome. I tell tales every single week that have perplexed me. So if you love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more, don't worry, you're in the right place. And if you end up enjoying today's episode, I would love if you continue to follow along. If you're a returning listener, hello, my friends. Welcome back. So happy you're here. And I have just an absolutely insane story for you guys today. And I am not alone. I'm so excited because joining me for the first time, I have Stacy from the Early on Wednesday podcast. And I also have returning to the show, my friend Alicia from Twisted and Uncorked podcast.
Hello.
What's up, party people?
I'm so excited you guys are here. Basically, we're in this podcast support group together, and I sent everybody a message when I was watching the new season of Unsolved Mysteries and was like, oh my God, have you guys seen this episode?
She needed to pick the brain of equally creepy people.
Well, yeah. I mean, the minute you said, I've got to talk about this, I'm like, I got to get in on this. I gotta watch and I gotta see. It's crazy.
And I would definitely recommend everybody listening, if you have not seen this, go watch it. It's the revamped Unsolved Mysteries. It's on Netflix. And this specific episode is season 4, episode 3. But I was telling Stacey, this is like one of my favorite shows. The revamped Unsolved Mysteries is so, so good. It's really well done. Yeah. Yes,
I'm excited. And if that intro wasn't crazy enough for you, this case is even crazier. And thank you so much, Kadra, for putting together the concise notes of it, because it was a lot to process.
Definitely. Before we get into the meat of everything, I want you to give me one word that you would use to describe this case.
Wow.
Yeah. I was gonna say, can I use WTF? Does that count?
Sure.
That too.
I'll accept it. I'll accept it.
Jaw on the floor.
My one word was just, what?
There you go. That's better.
That's why I had to message you guys right away. So yeah, without further ado, let's get into it. Trigger warning, as always, show's not for children. Listener discretion is advised. And the only source I used today was Unsolved Mysteries. Let's get into it. So this 15-year-old boy finds the severed head in the woods of rural Pennsylvania. He is never named, by the way, so I'm just going to refer to him as the boy throughout this episode. He does not touch the head. He quickly calls the police, and they actually play the 911 call on the Unsolved Mysteries episode. He sounds normal, like obviously a little freaked out, but nothing really seems off from the 911 call. The person who would respond to the scene was Sergeant Michael Genetic. He initially thought that it was some kind of prank, but he very quickly would realize this was no prank. It was a real human head. Genetic would quickly call for backup, and they would also contact Andy Gall. And I loved this. They said that he was their go-to guy for when something weird would happen, which I feel like is us in our friend groups, probably.
Yeah, I was going to say, can you imagine having that flex as a career? The right? Guy you call when something really fucked up happens. Perfect.
Oh, God. That's life goals right there. Hey, this is really weird. Who are you going to call, Stacey?
Probably can we be the modern day Lady Ghostbusters?
Ooh, yes. I love that they never put his credentials either, because I try to look for them whenever I'm watching those episodes, and it literally just said Andy Gall. And I was like, we're not going to like... So he's just the guy that you call when something weird happens. It just cracked me up.
He's like not officially employed everywhere. He just shows up.
So investigators would take note. This was the head of an older female. They estimated her to be between the ages of 60 and 80 years old. She had short, curly gray hair. And the head also appeared fresh. The skin and hair were pretty much perfectly intact. The head was found laying on its right side, and it was very close to the road, 31 feet away. It also looked like the head had just been placed there very recently, because leaves had been falling from the trees, but there was no debris on top of the head. And trigger warning, if you guys do watch this, they do show photos of the head, but they do blur out her face. They also pointed out, and I thought this was interesting and maybe something that is like an Easter egg for later, the nose of the Jane Doe was a bit flattened, as if the head had been in a box or a container for some time. There were no bullets nearby, no blood, but police considered this a murder until proven otherwise. So police called it a very scarce and strange crime scene. There was really nothing there aside from the head. It's like someone just dropped the head there and left. So my next question to y'all is, what are your thoughts on this crime scene and the manner in which Jane Doe's head was discovered?
It's never a mannequin. It's never a mannequin.
Absolutely. It felt either staged or rushed. Like somebody ran through that area in a rush with it and dropped it and just had to leave it behind, which seems unlikely, which is why I'm leaning more towards stage.
It literally feels like to me that it was placed softly, easily, but for shock value because of the way the head is sitting. it was facing down the trail.
I think the only thing that would be more shocking is if it was like sitting up, but it does seem very intentional to me.
It's a little, it's upsetting. Yeah, for sure. I mean, at the end of the day, this is a very, very interesting mystery, but this woman is still unknown, hence mm-hmm. the unsolved mystery portion of it. So it's like,
right.
It's sad to me. It's sad to me that this is her legacy, so to speak.
I feel bad because it somebody somewhere knows her. Somebody somewhere loved her. And somebody somewhere doesn't even know this has happened, I feel like.
Right. It reminded me of the Lady of the Dunes case, which did later get solved, though. So I have hope, especially since they just released this episode. I'm like, maybe that'll boost things in the right direction again, but it is very sad. So they would eventually pack the head into a cooler with ice, and they took her to the county morgue for an assessment. The autopsy technician would be a man named Timothy Manzowicz, who they interview in the episode. And with Manzowicz was Dr. James Smith. Manzowicz and Smith's initial reaction was that this head could be fake. The hair was so neatly combed, the eyes were gently closed, there was a light layer of makeup, and there was virtually no decomp. She was almost too perfect. But after an assessment, they would confirm this was a real human head. Jane Doe had been professionally embalmed.
They put her in an igloo, you know, beverage carrier. So I'm like, what happened? Did the sheriff like take his beer out of the cooler and put her in it and then seal it and was like, Bubba, don't drink that Budweiser. That no, leave that. You don't touch my beer. Leave it alone.
Yeah, it's no good.
I thought they used those same coolers for like organ donation too. And it always weirded me out because on Grey's Anatomy, it's weird.
They do. And they're actually ones that are designated for that. But I had to laugh because
he whipped it out pretty quickly. Yeah.
But the camera like kind of pans a little bit down tight of it. And you see real big igloo.
So the head had been cleanly sliced off after the embalming, going between the spinal cord and the joints. The cut appeared to have been made with a sharp medical-grade tool, like a scalpel. They then assessed Jane Doe's eye sockets. Under her eyes were plastic eye caps, which I had never heard of, so this was cool to learn about. They expected to find these, and in embalming and funeral proceedings, the eyes are preserved and covered by domed plastic caps. And this also ensures that the eyelid will hold its natural shape. But behind those two eye caps, Dr. Smith and Manzowicz would find something that perplexes them and investigators to date. Instead of eyeballs, small, red, rubbery, bouncy balls were found. Jane Doe's eyes had been removed. This could have been because of organ donation, but the balls were incredibly peculiar. And this part made me laugh. They like called multiple funeral homes and mortuaries to like make sure this wasn't a known practice.
I mean, you got to do your due diligence, but at the same time, what? Like,
yeah.
Anyone that listens to our show knows that I have a weird eye thing. So, me, no disrespect to this, I can't deal with the thought process of your eye being replaced with a rubber bouncy ball.
Well, and that investigator talks too about how he goes into like the pizza parlor that he always eats at, and he sees that bouncy ball machine. I think he like popped some quarters in and pulled them out. And like Stacy said, you can get them super cheap in China, and that's where they traced these back to. And because they were so popular in China, these bouncy balls were untraceable. So just a super weird finding that is another mystery in all of this.
Could you imagine that? Is you're the manager of that factory and this small town police department calls you and is asking about it, and you're looking over at the assembly line where literally 10 million of the exact same thing has just rolled off, and you want to help, but at the same time, it's like, there was 10 million today, there was 10 million yesterday, there'll be 10 million tomorrow.
Exactly. So that's another thing that's like, it just seems very intentional. Like the head was,
because it's hard to trace.
Yeah, it's almost like mocking them a little bit to me. So my other question to y'all was, what are y'all's thoughts on the precision of this embalming and decapitation?
This was a professional job. This person knew exactly where they needed to go on the neck and the spinal cord to get a clean. They had the right tools. They had the amount of time. They had the right environment to be able to cleanly take our Jane Doe's head off. And this is more than likely, I would bet a paycheck that this is not the first time, nor the last time that they removed a limb of some type. I mean, it's bad to call a head a limb, but a surgical removal, you can tell it wasn't, amateurs at it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I mean, it's unsettling no matter what, but there's something about it being like professionally done where you're just like, ugh. Cause I think you know what it is. If it's professionally done, they do it a lot. So it's the idea of like, this could be happening to other people. It creeps me out.
Like the embalmment to me was possibly most likely done after her death during her proper burial. It's the professionally cut head that's deeply unsettling because that happened after the process.
Hear me out on this. This is a wild one. I like to jump down the rabbit holes. She's still unidentified. She was embalmed professionally. She was dismembered or decapitated professionally. What if this person was actually supposed to be cremated? They don't always take all of the ashes out. Sometimes there are some that get to the bottom and they're not gonna, make sure they have every. So what if she was actually supposed to be cremated and they gave the family somebody else's ashes? This family's out there thinking their loved one is in a beautiful urn and is with them. You guys know what body brokers are, right?
Oh, yeah. That's why I'm not surprised by anything you're saying. I literally did a story where they like proved that there was a funeral home that was doing that. Like bodies were going in, different people's ashes were coming out, and they were giving other people's ashes to family members. It was a story
my I covered worst in nightmare.
China. Yeah, it's awful. Mm-hmm. It's a disgusting business. They make money off of it.
We had actually something like that in California where there was a funeral home that was charging for cremation and they were selling the bodies to med schools. And just honestly, if you wanted to buy it, you could buy it. They didn't care. But they were taking and burning wood and charcoal, and mostly charcoal, and putting it into urns and giving it to the family. They got busted because one of a family member either opened or something happened with the lid on an urn. Like my mom's urn is sealed, so it can never be opened, but there was something happened, a lid came off, and they actually found charred wood.
So 2 days after the head was found, police would continue their search, hoping to find more of Jane Doe, but no other body parts were found. During their canvassing, they met the man who lived in the house right by where the head was found, just across the street. He was an older man who lived alone, and his name was Jay Grabner. The day of the search, Grabner actually approached the police. He seemed very curious about the discovery of the head and said that it was, quote, too pretty and convenient for a kid to come upon. According to the police, he would proceed to make several incredibly odd statements, none of which were useful, and he seemed to want to be the center of attention. He also seemed to have suspicions of the 15-year-old boy who found the head. But police would interview the 15-year-old, and he was very open, cooperative, and police quickly ruled him out as a suspect. So my next question is, what was y'all's first impression of Jay Grabner?
Okay. There's always that one busybody that's either in the trailer park, in the neighborhood, in the apartment complex. There's always one. And it doesn't matter if your car burnt to the ground or you threw out your trash in the wrong bin. They're there. They know what happened because they were watching you through their damn blinds because they have nothing else going for them. And that's him.
Yep.
This dude literally has nothing going for himself because he inserted himself into the investigation, which we all know perpetrators do that too, because they want to monitor what the police know and they want to feel important. They want to feel like they solved the case because more than likely they caused the case.
People don't want to be involved with the police at all. Obviously, if they're like, hey, we need to bring you in for questioning, then most people are going to be cooperative, but they're only going to give the information that like pertains to them.
The 15-year-old kid, now that right there is how you, an innocent person interviews, because it was like, did you touch it? No. Did you tell anybody? I told my grandma. Did you text anybody? Nope.
Exactly.
That was it.
Yeah.
That was it.
You guys just have to watch this episode. He's so incredibly strange.
Odd.
Yeah.
I myself, whenever I cover a case, if there's the opportunity to watch interrogation videos, I love watching them because they're so interesting. How much you'll see a person give away with just their body language. And I know Kadra will be getting to this shortly. There's a very clear I don't want to say mental illness because I don't think that that's the right word, but not all of the screws are there.
Yeah.
Based on his motivations.
Not to get too clinical, but he's very verbose. He's very tangential. His thought organization is weird. So his speech patterns are hard to follow, which is something you often see with people who are either neurodivergent or have some type of mental illness. But then it's paired with this rage, when he's talking to that, I forget his name, but the bald guy that was a journalist, I think, and he keeps coming to his house and interviewing him. He is up close, no concept of personal space. And he keeps aggressively pointing at him and is like, this is what happened, blah, 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 blah. And he's yelling. I have a quote from him later, but a lot of rage and a lot of very odd behavior for sure.
Yeah, that's why I was drawn to the word mental illness, but maybe that's not the full picture.
I personally think he does show signs of some type of mental illness.
And that's coming. I have ADHD, so I'm that's coming from somebody who is neurodivergent.
And I'm not saying that, let me be very clear, I'm not saying mentally ill means neurodivergent. The mental illness thought that I had is related to things that we know happen later, but also just his initial behaviors are common with people who are dealing with mental illness.
Unnecessarily aggressive in a situation that he supposedly had nothing to do with and was just an observer of.
Yeah.
Unnecessarily assertive, too. I mean, he was driving his point home and there was not a point to be made.
Meanwhile, police would work to identify Jane Doe and find the rest of her remains. So they took samples from her head, her hair, her brain, and other tissues. They were hoping to get DNA. So they sent this all off to Ancestry, along with the FBI and universities. But they would find nothing. They couldn't get a DNA profile, and they had no DNA to go with because, come to find out, embalming fluid deteriorates DNA. So that's unfortunate. Investigators then hired a forensic artist named Michelle Vitali to create a likeness of Jane Doe, and she created a sketch to start. Vitali took note that the mystery woman had several distinctive features. She had two small moles on her left cheek, she had a perm, and she may have been a smoker because of the lines around her lips and the discoloration in her teeth. The sketch was quickly released to the public, but once again, no leads would come. So then police consulted Vitali again, and she created a clay model of Jane Doe, which was pretty cool. I personally have not seen this done before, but they wanted to do a 3D model to get other angles of her, see if that would help people recognize her more. And this did result in more phone calls coming in, so then police would get their first lead. So this lead came from Union Cemetery of Fayetteville County. This was about an hour and a half south from Economy Borough, where Jane Doe's head was found. The lead came from a coroner who said that one of their crypts in their cemetery had been broken into. The casket had been pulled from the wall, and the head was missing. But, this is the kicker, this crime took place August 4th, 1988. And Jane Doe was found December 12th, 2014. So if this was Jane Doe's body, where had her head been for the last 26 years?
They probably grabbed a hold of it thinking they had a lead. And then when they discovered the, you know, very large time frame that from one to the other, I think it crushed that lead. But when you were saying, Kedra, you haven't seen them do the 3D sculptures, they don't do them anymore. They don't do like the sketching anymore because of DNA, the advancements in DNA now. But in the 80s and early 90s, getting close to 2000, that was a big thing. If you go and look at some of the older crime shows and stuff, like America's Most Wanted, they'll have a Jane Doe and they'll have a bust of her made with that's done in clay. And I mean, morbidly, it's very interesting.
Mm. It is very interesting.
But they found Jane Doe's head in 2014 and they did the sculpture from her. So
yeah. So maybe that right. why it was a unique move on their part.
Yeah. That's cool. So they were more common in 80s, 90s. Yeah,
and
okay.
with the embalming, kind of robbing them of the ability to use DNA.
Okay,
because
yeah.
what Ooh. Happens when we?
Oh, I didn't even get, put that connection together. That's so interesting. Yeah.
Well, because think about it. What happens when we get an innovation to something? We use it to its end. We saturate ourselves with it, and so they weren't able to use the one tool that we've leaned on so much. You know, so it was like, well, maybe we got to go back to the basics. Maybe we go back to square one.
Yeah. I did appreciate them. Like, it seems like they exhausted a lot of different leads trying to figure it out. So the body with the stolen head from Fayetteville County was identified to be a local Fayetteville resident named Teresa DiCarlo. And when I initially saw her photo, I was like, oh my gosh, this looks like the Jane Doe. She passed away in the early 50s when she was 75 years old, and the rear window of her crypt had been smashed in, as well as the glass liner in her coffin. It also appeared that sharp knife-like tools were used to decapitate Teresa's head. The Fayetteville County investigators never found the head, and they also searched other graves and found no other signs of desecrations. So for whatever reason, these robbers only were interested in Teresa's head, and they neglected to take any valuables from the crypt, like she had expensive jewelry on, and they didn't take that. According to Fayetteville investigators, they thought it was some sort of satanic crime, which makes sense because this was, I think, 88 when they found her, so like the height of satanic panic. They said that there was allegedly an active satanic cult in the area, and so getting a head would have been like a big deal for them because it's like the most powerful part of the body or whatever. And apparently close by to the cemetery, Dunbar Cave, there were a lot of satanic rituals and parties happening. Teresa DiCarlo, they show her picture in the episode, and she is an older white woman, just like Jane Doe. They both have short, curly gray hair, wide-set eyes, long, wide nose, thin lips. So, did you guys have any thoughts on Teresa DiCarlo's grave robbery, the similarities between the women, any, like, theories on how they could be connected or if the crimes could be connected at all?
I don't think the crime is connected at all. I mean, it was 88. We were in the middle of the satanic panic. And kind of like now, I mean, and, you know, I am a member of the LGBTQ plus community. So please, audience, don't take offense to this. But right now, our shock and awe factor is the whole gender fluid type behaviors where you have very masculine men that are wearing, you know, nail polish. And it's not like the goth metal black polish kind of thing. It's they're doing more feminine type behaviors. And so that's what we're going through right now. And in back in the 80s, the shock and awe was if you listen to death metal, and you drew a pentagram on the ground, there's candles on it. Oh my gosh, you're evil. We're scared of you. It's also believed in a lot of different religions and paganism that the windows are the eyes to the soul. So the head would be the most powerful in a ritual because of the eyes. Well, it would make sense that Mrs. DiCarlo's eyes would have been removed if mm-hmm. they had found the head. But I don't think the two are connected in any way.
And if, correct me if I'm wrong, if any listener knows more than I do, but don't embalmments usually only last between like 5 and 15 years, like depending? So the time that DiCarlo was buried versus when this head was found, there would have been some sort of decomposition if that was her head, I imagine. And seemed like her head was removed more hastily by somebody who was possibly robbing it for that reason versus our Jane Doe, who it was more of like a clean professional cut.
Yeah, I think they just said like sharp knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't believe it was an actual traditional grave robbery because, you know, they didn't take the jewelry, but they may not have been smart enough to realize they could take it to a pawn shop. We weren't in the time frame where they can check if it's stolen or not in anymore. I mean, they can now, but they couldn't really then. Honestly, it sounds like some dumb kids that thought they were cool and wanted to be Satanists. And there was a glass window. They knocked it out. There was a glass casket. They knocked it out. It was easy.
And remember, they couldn't get DNA off of Jane Doe. So at this point, investigators were just trying to see, okay, is there any other way that we could definitively match Jane Doe's head to Teresa's body? So the next thing that they did is they consulted a forensic dentist named Dr. Mary Bush. So Bush took notice of Jane Doe's extensive dentistry work. She had fillings in the front made of barium glass. Barium glass is fairly common today. It's a more modern material. It was definitely not around in the early 50s when Teresa DiCarlo passed away. So this is how they were able to for sure confirm that Jane Doe's head did not belong to Teresa DiCarlo. But that's another mystery in this episode is, what happened to Teresa DiCarlo's head? So Jane Doe's dental work was estimated to have been done sometime in the 80s or 90s. So police were back to square one and they start exploring other theories. So they wondered if Jane Doe's head had been removed shortly after embalming, in between going from the funeral proceedings to either be buried or to be cremated. If a body is embalmed for viewing, then later cremated, there can be several days before the body's cremated where they're just sitting there. So police speculated someone could have removed the head during this time. Then they started talking about the body brokers thing, like we brought up earlier. There have been funeral directors in the U.S. that have been caught doing this, selling body parts. So maybe Jane Doe was a victim to some type of underground black market deal. So Blake Morrison, investigative reporter, had been working on a story about illegal sales of body parts and looked into Jane Doe's case. He is interviewed in the documentary and explains the lack of checks and balances in the industry. He talks about the conferences at hotels where doctors have body parts that they work on for demonstrations. And body brokers are involved in this whole process. They sell human heads for as little as $500, which blew my mind. And during Morrison's investigation, he wanted to go out to the area where the head had been found. So pretty much as soon as he gets there, out walks Jay Grabner, the homeowner that we were talking about earlier. And Jay would once again share his interesting theories, including that this 15-year-old boy was involved in Jane Doe's head being placed there.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit. Track budgets and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Grabner would also admit he had been friends, quote-unquote, weird wording, with this 15-year-old teenage boy, and he said that he mentored him, taught him things, then for some reason they had a falling out, and according to Jay, this boy was no longer allowed to come onto his property anymore. He said he, quote, didn't ever want him coming to his house again. So my next question is, what are y'all's thoughts on the casual gloss over in this episode of Jay's quote-unquote relationship with a 15-year-old boy?
Am I the only one that got grooming behaviors out of this? I was, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I mentored him. Yeah, how many pedophiles have we heard that have said, oh, well, I taught them and I was teaching. My thought pattern is he tried something and this young man went home and told his parents, guardians, you know, whomever. They probably said something to him they obviously didn't say anything to the local police because I'm sure the police would be like, yeah, we had a report. But they probably went over and was like, hey, my kid's not coming over here again. I seriously doubt Jay told him, no, you can't come, because I think he was grooming him.
Yeah, it immediately gave me red flags. I was like, sorry, why are we not talking about this more? And the 15-year-old is unnamed and his face is blurred out throughout the whole episode. And so it's like, okay, are they doing this because he's a minor? Or could it be because, just conspiracy speculating here, but like, could there be an active investigation going on with, you know, what may have happened with Jay and this boy? It just really, I don't know, it rubbed me the wrong way. It's very odd.
It's more than likely because he's a minor.
Yeah. But even still, like, some of Jay's aggression towards this kid could lend to, yes, what we'll get to, but also possibly a rejection or, you know, things not going as smoothly as he would have wanted it to in that scenario. It's weird. I don't know anybody over the age of 30 that is friends with a 15-year-old boy that isn't related to them or, you know, knows them through a friend or some, like a family friend, like a family right situation, I mean.
Well, okay, yeah, that's like weird. I was gonna say is our son is 17 and he has a very close relationship with our family friend, with her and her husband, but it's because, well, one, we've, you know, we're all family friends, but this man is like, you want to talk about father of the year. Like, he raised a CHP officer, he raised a firefighter, he was military, all of his kids are military. So it's things that interest our son. He doesn't go over just on a, you know, just by himself. He would rather be with people his own age. But if we say, hey, we're heading over to this one, you know, to this house. Oh, okay. Sometimes he wants to go, sometimes he doesn't. But just to go out and have a friend that's 15 and you're old as dirt? No. No.
I also just have a really hard time. Like, obviously, we don't know either of these people, and we really don't know much at all about the 15-year-old boy, but I have a really hard time visualizing a situation where a 15-year-old would want to hang out with this guy.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's not like he's got a house full of video games, so... And if he did, then that would definitely talk about grooming behaviors.
Or like he was in a situation where he could have possibly been working for him or something. Like, there was no element where it made sense.
Right. That would make way more sense if he was like, oh, he helped me take care of the horse, which we're about to talk about. Or he helped me do these chores, blah, blah, blah.
He helped me with chores. I paid him a little bit. One time he didn't do a good job, he broke my window. I just said, you know, I don't think you should do this anymore.
So soon after what Jay called the falling out, there was more information that came to light. He started talking about a neighbor's horse named Ginger. That this was another really weird part of the story. Jay had really loved this horse. It was not his horse. He just really liked it.
That was the weirdest part. If it was his horse, it would have been fine. Like, this relationship, I mean, like, his love for it would have been fun.
Yeah, I don't, it was, yeah, it's weird.
I fall in love with every animal I
do
meet,
too. Yes.
But I'm not gonna go and be like, this is Ginger, this is my horse, I love this horse.
It's not your best and only friend. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he's like, I think kissing like a stocking or something that was like left on her grave. It's just very, very odd. The reason the horse is significant is because Jay claims that one day he came outside and he found Ginger bleeding in the field. It just says they called a veterinarian. So I don't know if it's like Jay got the neighbor or what, but a vet comes out there and they said Ginger had been stabbed. Ginger lived for a few more weeks, but then she passed away. And Jay would tell investigators he seemed to think that the teenage boy had stabbed and murdered the horse in retaliation because of he and Jay's falling out. And this is the other point in the show where I was just like, what is going on?
Oh, okay, one, I'm getting conspiracy theory here for a second. I don't think anybody murdered the horse. I truly don't think it was stabbed. I think maybe he injured himself. Maybe he, you know, somehow he got injured. 15-year-old kids that have no criminal record just don't go around stabbing, you know, animals. I mean, did they carve their name in wood? Yeah. Do they start, you know, stab trees, stab sticks? They don't stab living things unless they've done it before, and especially something the size of a horse.
Yeah, I know he had like gotten into hunting, but I really don't see a situation where you have a falling out with a however 60, 70 year old man. And so your thought is, I'm going to go stab his neighbor's horse that he's obsessed with to upset him. Like, it just, the thought process throughout all of this is not there for me.
I agree. Again, if it had been Jay's horse, there would have been possibly a motive there. But the horse didn't belong to him, so.
Well, in two, I mean, it's a 15-year-old kid. Maybe, okay, I'm gonna get back at him. I'm gonna throw a rock through his window. I'm gonna flatten his tire. I'm gonna key his car.
Yeah.
I'm gonna piss in his mailbox. You know?
So for months after Ginger's death, Jay would allegedly tell multiple neighbors about his plans to take revenge. This was confirmed by multiple others that police would interview. The investigative reporter Morrison continued to talk to Jay, and he did an interview with him on camera. At one point in the interview, Morrison asks Jay what his theory is, and he would say, quote, "They do seminars at some of these hotels and stuff like that, where they put plastic on the floor, and they cut, they experiment, and take eyes and legs and arms, whatever, hearts, kidneys, or whatever." End quote. Morrison's ears perked up. Why did Jay know so much about body brokers? Jay also knew a lot of times that leftover body parts were discarded in dumpsters, which surprised Morrison because he had been researching this for years and did not know this fact. Additionally, when Morrison got a tour of Jay's home, he noticed an area with a window and a telescope. And the telescope pointed perfectly to the exact area where Jane Doe's head was found. It was like this heavily wooded area, and then there was this one spot where there was this kind of gap between the trees, and that is the exact spot where her head was placed. So Morrison wondered if Jay could have been the one to put the head there and then just watched through the window, waited for the little boy to come and watch through his telescope. The other weird thing too is this is the exact spot, or maybe a few feet away, but like right by where Ginger had been injured. So this spot was also of sentimental value to Jay. So any thoughts on Jay's motive and the circumstantial evidence?
Other than he's a Fruit Loop? Okay, I just... throw it out there. I worked with sex offenders in LA County when I got out of college. And this was also the trail where the young man took quite a bit. And like you said in the beginning, the deer processing plant. To me, it feels like this may be the only place that he could get a glimpse of this boy. So he can watch him walk back and forth because he's in that clearing. I think he put it there, and he put it there to watch this boy find it. And because there's no, as much of a busybody as he is, and as much as he wanted to insert himself, there's no way that he looked out his telescope, saw a head, and didn't call the police himself or go look at it. I mean, I'm morbid. I'd go look at it.
Well, and just knowing him and how nosy he is, the second that something isn't how it's supposed to be, outside of his house, he's going to go look at it, you know?
That's right. And if Ginger was, you know, his soul animal, and it's close to where Ginger got hurt, hell yeah.
And if you guys look at this episode, they show his house, and it's very remote. It's not like there's a bunch of other houses nearby, and it's this heavily trafficked area where all these people could be coming through. It's just like the one person, the one lead that you had, he's right across the street. There's nobody else nearby. Like, there's just way too many coincidences.
And he has extensive knowledge of body brokers.
Yeah.
And how they dispose of parts that were used.
Yeah, whether it was like a possible rejection on the part of Jay allegedly possibly grooming this boy and a way to get back at him, or a way to disturb and mentally mess with him, maybe break him so that he would come to him for comfort. That's all a possibility in my brain. But again, the horse is the one weird element. I get loving animals. I love animals more than people. I say it on the show all the time. But I would never want to seek revenge against a child where there's no proof that this child had anything to do with it. Like, it's just It's a very odd thing, but I think that there's too many coincidences to believe that Jay didn't, to not believe that Jay put it there, I should say.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I think Jay put the head there, and I think he did it to scare the boy because he was upset that he didn't get what he wanted. And so he kind of acted out in violence in a way and was like, maybe trying to taunt him of like, I could do this to you.
Yes.
Like that's kind of what I took it as. Yeah.
Yeah.
A threat. Okay. So Morrison eventually asked Jay if he would take a polygraph test. And this is where I have a quote just to show his anger. Okay. I've never done this on the podcast before, but I'm going to try to imitate this guy. Okay. So he would say, "Fucking right. You're fucking right. I would. Them motherfuckers think I had anything to do with that head? I'll do it tomorrow. Go get the damn thing set up. I'll do it tomorrow. You don't think I'm serious about getting this solved?" So he's literally yelling.
Well done. Well done.
Y'all have to watch this. He's like red. He's red-faced.
Like tomato red.
He's furious. Like the idea that you guys want me to take a polygraph when I'm the only person who lives right here and I'm acting weird as shit.
Well, and okay. And then on top of it, it's why do you so animately have to prove your innocence? If you're truly innocent, I mean, and I'm just going to say it because we talk about it all the time. You don't have to take a polygraph, and it's better if you don't, because even though they're not admissible in court, they can still use that information against you.
And I mean, obviously, too, like more recently, polygraphs, they've done more science on them and seen that they're not as accurate as people always used to portray in like earlier crimes. So I think, you know, sometimes in these situations, they use it as a tool to like scare the person. But yeah, it was very, very odd, just his reaction. He was very defensive. So first they asked Jay a bunch of questions to get a baseline, and then they asked him three questions related to their investigation. Did you place the severed head in that field? Regarding that severed head found across from your house, did you place that there? Did you plan with anyone to place that head in the field? So Jay would answer no to all of these questions. And deception was identified in all three questions. According to them, regardless of your opinions on polygraphs, there was a 99.9% chance he was not telling the truth. Do y'all have any thoughts on his polygraph?
Yeah, he was too worked up. That's why. I mean, honestly, I don't believe in polygraphs. I don't think, I think if somebody is lying and they're good at it, Dahmer, Gacy, Bundy, you know, Manson, they could pass it with no problem because their heart rate never changes. But when you're that animate about trying to prove your innocence, you're going to fail it every time because your heart rate's going to go up.
I don't necessarily believe in polygraphs either because they are very easy to pass if you're in a calm state of mind. Like Stacey said, he's going to fail it every time because he's all worked up and bent out of shape. If he had taken it in a situation where he was in a calm state, I think it's possible that he could have passed it. Like what speaks to me is his mannerisms throughout all of it. It's just very disorganized, very, I didn't do it. I didn't do it. I'm going to prove to you I didn't do it.
Jay had also lost his dog some years back, and he had double bagged and freeze dried her, preserving her in a small freezer in his home. Morrison made note that this freezer could have fit a human head. And Jay had also lost his mother 15 years before Jane Doe's head was found. So another thing they theorized or wondered as if this head, and this is a scary thought, could have been Jay's own mother. They checked with the funeral home and the cemetery that were involved with Jay's mother's burial and proceedings. They checked with family members, and they said when experts looked at pictures of Jay's mom, they didn't feel it matched But I did notice that they never say they exhumed her. They never say her head was intact. They just say the pictures don't match. So I did just want to point out the wording was a little bit weird to me because they don't confirm or deny. They just say the pictures didn't seem to match.
It was kind of like a half-assed attempt. Like maybe they had to prove there was enough evidence to exhume her body. Because I know that, you know, getting exhumations are difficult. They're very difficult because they're very taboo, especially in certain religious beliefs. So maybe they looked at it and that was how they got it. It just said, you know, they don't look enough alike to petition a court to get an order to exhume her. And okay, again, we've talked about how much I love my Puppertons, and, you know, I will have them in some way, shape, or form with me. But that dude had medicine and ice in that freezer with his dog? Ew.
Yeah, he's very unwell.
I don't get putting them in the freezer, personally. That's very odd to me. I think that's weirder than getting your dog, like, embalmed.
Or taxidermied.
Sorry, that's what I meant, taxidermied.
I mean, you could embalm your dog, but...
It's kind of weird, but it's not as weird as the fact that you freeze-dried this puppy and then you put it in the freezer. Why?
And it's a freezer he uses, like you said, for like other things too. It's not like it's his little grave and that's the only thing in there.
There's pieces missing to this process.
On September 30th, 2020, Jay Grabner drove his pickup truck onto the Ohio Turnpike, pulled up along an overpass, and parked there. He then got out and jumped in front of a truck. Death by suicide. Investigators saw Jay Grabner as their last lead in solving this case. So we still don't know who committed this crime. And the even bigger mystery is, who was this woman? Jane Doe's head was put to rest in a Beaver County cemetery. They also did a funeral service on the anniversary of her discovery, which I thought was really sweet. They buried her in a full-sized casket, hoping that they will someday be able to reunite her with the rest of her body and rebury her. This woman deserves to have an identity. She deserves a headstone with her name on it. So they ended the episode saying, you can go to unsolved.com if you have information on who this Jane Doe could be. So that is the story. So I want to know, like, what are y'all's thoughts on how things ended with Jay? What are y'all's theories? You know, who could this woman be? What do y'all think happened?
Again, of course, no expert, never claimed to be. But I don't think Jay was involved in body brokering, because I think you have to be smart to do that. And I'm not saying like he's stupid, but I mean, like, he doesn't have the type of mentality to not get caught. And it's obvious this is not a legal thing. So, I mean, he's that friend that never shuts his mouth, so you don't tell him anything. But I think he knew about it because he probably went around dumpster diving and he came across it and thought, oh, I have the perfect use for this. And that's why I think the head was severed professionally. And that's why it was so clean, is because that's what it was. It was a body brokerage funeral home. And I stand by the theory that somebody thinks their loved one is at peace and at rest because they have cremains. They didn't. They used it for something else. And the red rubber balls behind their eyes says to me that maybe the eyes, they took the eyes for, like, maybe they were going through dissecting the eye to be able to take a look at it. Or it was sold to you know, an optometrist's or an optical surgeon's type class. And so red balls were put behind her eyes so that whoever used her head in the convention still had the look of a human. Or unless maybe the eyes were taken out of that head at the convention, they put balls in so it could be used for something else, and it never was. Nobody else bought it.
I think that's a solid theory, Stacey, and something that I didn't necessarily think of. And I do agree with your thought pattern that he didn't have the mental faculties to get from point A to point B in a smooth line. I think it could have been happenstance, and he did the research afterwards and is spitballing to police that, you know, this happens all the time and that's how this came to be. And that's obviously why this head is here. I also stand by what I said in our group chat that innocent people don't complete suicide unless they feel some sort of deep mental anguish or some sort of guilt. And if he was responsible for procuring this head on his own in some way, maybe he did feel guilty about it, or maybe he felt some sort of guilt about what he had possibly done to this boy and, you know, the steps that he took to get back at him. It's just very strange. I get the fear of being investigated by police officers, but if you truly had nothing to do with it, and unfortunately I'm going to pull a race card here, he is a white man, an old white man. So, I mean, he doesn't have to necessarily worry about possible racial profiling and pinning it on him in an investigation like this. That, and there was nothing to tie him to a head that they don't have an identity for. So I feel like it had to be guilt motivated more than anything.
It really is. My theory on Jay's suicide, I thought about it as, well, everybody has a cleanup crew. I mean, and if you're doing illegal things, you're paying cash out for body parts. Doctors and, you know, researchers and students, they're going to clean up after themselves. What if he was part of a cleanup crew? And maybe somebody said to him, hey, there's a head showed up at your house, across from your house, and the police are investigating it. What have you told them? Maybe it wasn't the police he was scared of coming after him.
And I don't know, this is the other thing I wondered. I don't know the timeline, because they don't say, like they say when he died, but they don't say when the polygraph was done. But the way that they at least edit it in the Unsolved Mysteries, it's like they're putting the heat on him. He gets this polygraph, he fails it, and then he completes suicide. And it's like, when... I want to know kind of the timeline of events here, because if it's like years went by and then this happened, then it's more of a mystery of like, could something else have been happening? He kind of has this mental decline, or was it really like quickly after this investigation? Any final thoughts?
What the fuck?
Yeah. Wow.
I can't wait to hear what your listeners, when we post it, what our listeners have to say, because I'm open to all theories at this point.
I know.
Because nothing makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. It is literally everything makes sense. You can see where one theory, how the theories can branch off from the main event. And be plausible.
There's so many elements.
Yeah, I think Jay was a sad man. I think he was a sad man that had an attraction to a 15-year-old boy. Maybe he wanted power over something because he didn't have power over anything else.
And maybe this action was a way to get back power.
I think you hit something right there, Alicia, big time. I think you hit something.
Oh, either way, it's incredibly sad that this woman does not have an identity still, that this kid was, I feel, tormented by a grown man.
Mm-hmm.
And it's deeply disturbing.
Yeah. And I think it's good to just like just like a brief recap, remember like all of the weird elements to this. The red rubber balls behind her eyes, her being professionally embalmed, a very clean, professionally done decapitation, the manner in which she was found, like, super fresh, looked like she had just been placed there, can't get DNA. And then they like have all these other theories they go down of like, oh, could it be this person? Could it be linked to this satanic cult? What's up with this Jay guy? What happens to his horse? What happens to Teresa DiCarlo? There's so many questions that come up through the whole thing where you're just like, what the hell? All these questions are building and you almost have a couple of points where you feel like, and it's unsolved mysteries, so it's like, of course it's not going to get solved, but do you know what I mean? There's these points where you feel like, oh, they're going to find something. They're going to figure something out. And oh, this Jay guy's so weird. And then nope, that lead's gone. And it's just so strange and crazy.
And I'm glad we were able to spitball this because this is honestly theorizing and diving deep into the mindset of the people that are involved in these types of cases are why I enjoy true crime so much as a psychology major. So it's like, I love having like-minded, intelligently spoken and thought women like yourself to discuss it with. So thank you, Pedra, for putting this together.
Absolutely.
Yes, thank you so much for just putting out into the chat room, like, I need to talk about this, because then the rest of us are like, you know what? We do too.
I told my fiance after I watched it, I was like, I think this is one of the weirdest stories I have ever heard. So I just, I really wanted to make it more conversational. And yeah, this was great. So that is the perplexing story of Economy Burroughs, Pennsylvania Jane Doe, the severed head case. Like I said, it's featured in the revamped Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix, season 4, episode 3. I would recommend everybody go check that out. And please let us know your thoughts, because what a wild ride that story was. And I wanted to give a special thank you to Stacy from the Early on Wednesday podcast for joining us today, and my friend Alicia from Twisted and Uncorked. You guys need to check them out wherever you get your podcasts. And if you do, tell them Perplexity sent you, please and thank you.
You know, just any time you get another perplexing wild hair story, I mean, I'm pretty sure Alicia and I will come right back on.
Yeah.
Dive down the Unsolved Mysteries rabbit hole together.
Yes. Oh, that would be fun. Yeah, I like recording with guests. It's nice to have those opportunities to bounce things off of people. And I try to be really intentional about the stories I pick to do with a guest. And I think this was a good one to do. So,
yeah.
Well, if you guys have not done so yet, please leave a 5-star review wherever you listen. It really helps the show. If you're watching on YouTube, you can hit that subscribe button and drop a comment down below. Tell me what you thought about this case and if you've watched the Unsolved Mysteries episode. And just want to remind everybody, you can always get early ad-free episodes. You can get merch, bonus content, tons of perks on patreon.com/perplexitymysterypodcast. You all are amazing. I hope you have a great week and stay safe. And I'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Perplexity, a mystery podcast, hosted, written, and produced by Kadra Brennan. If you enjoyed today's episode, tell the world about it by going to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leaving a 5-star review. It helps the show more than you know. Contact, support, and merch links can be found in the episode description. And if you have a story to share or a topic request, send an email to perplexitymysterypodcast@gmail.com. Kadra would love to read your story on the podcast. Until next week, stay curious.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.